You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Thursday to you. Appreciate you being here. A lot to get to today on our show. Bubba Carpenter is in studio. We're going to talk Arkansas baseball's midweek sweep of ORU, plus this weekend series against South Carolina at Baum Walker Stadium. We'll end the show with Anthony Christensen from Providence to talk about tonight's basketball game between the Razorbacks and the Jayhawks at the NCAA tournament. Arkansas beat ORU this week 4-1 and 16-0 in seven innings yesterday. Almost saw history on two different fronts yesterday. Arkansas scored 12 runs in the fourth inning, and Cam Kozel, with a couple of base runners, flied out right in front of the fence. Otherwise, and if that ends up being a home run, it's the highest scoring inning in the history of Arkansas baseball. And then they took a no-hitter into the sixth inning of a seven-inning game. Dylan Carter ended up giving up a hit to lead off the sixth. But a couple of different – would you believe that there's never been a no-hitter at Baum Walker Stadium, by the way, Bubba?
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
So, thought we had it yesterday, though. I felt really good when, you know, they had that one play to Fraser at third base, yeah. Tough play.
Which was initially ruled a hit, yeah. And then they overturned it.
Yeah, you're at home. That's not a hit. At home, in a situation like that, you got to give an error.
I don't think you and I can do a podcast without mentioning Oliver Grigg. He's the baseball communications director at Arkansas. He's also the official scorer for the games. And I told Oliver, I didn't say anything. You know, he said base hit. And I'm like, that's whatever. Anyway, and then about 4 or 5 minutes later, he comes back. He said, hey, we're going to change that to an error. And I said, I thought it was an error in real time. I thought that a good throw by Fraser to first base would have gotten the base runner.
Right. No, you're right. A good throw would have gotten him. It's a tough play, though. It's a really tough play. But I think at home in that situation, you give an error every time. When I'm on the road, I want to hit there, though.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. When you got a no-hitter going, you change it.
So I don't know if you guys listen to us in the press box, but when there's one like that, I always get my opinion out there. I'm like, oh, you got to give him a hit there. I don't know if Oliver listens or not.
He does not, or at least not out loud. Sometimes he'll have a little earphone in his ear. Maybe he's listening to you. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing. This 12-run inning that they had, you know, this is, number one, everybody kind of thought it was over after seven runs. Charles Davelin gets thrown out at first base, or at least that's what it was called on the field. And then you go back and you look at the replay and you see that his foot hit the bag before the ball got to the first baseman. And then after that, you know, Vahiva Aloy, that allows a run to score, and then Vahiva Aloy has a two-run triple, and then Logan Maxwell hits a home run, and that's kind of how these big innings go, is when you give a good offense a chance for extra at-bats, yeah, or extra bases or whatever the case may be. A lot of times they're going to make you pay, but, you know, it's the second time that I've seen a 12-run inning in person. I was there in 2010 when they set the record against St. Louis. And that night, they scored 14 in the first inning. And against St. Louis, they had 13 on base, or they sent 13 to the bat or to the plate before there was ever an out in the inning. So
wow.
You don't forget innings like that. But a 12-run inning, that's something that, I mean, again, 15 years since the last time we saw that.
Well, okay, so on the broadcast, people probably think I'm crazy, but you know what my favorite play of that whole inning was?
Of that inning? Well, I mean, it probably not Davelin. Or is it the Davelin play?
Davelin.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, by the way, are we Davelin? Are you saying Davelin?
I say Davelin.
Christina and I had this conversation yesterday, and we could not come to a consensus about how to say his last name. So we have just started calling him Chucky D.
Chucky D.
Chucky D.
Well, that kind of goes back to like Robert Moore. I could never call Robert Bob. Never in my life have I called Robert Moore Bob. Everyone else called him Bob, mm-hmm, like in the media. Mm-hmm. Like everything was,
oh,
Bob.
I never called him Bob.
Oh, you didn't?
I never did.
I know a lot of people called him Bob, and
yeah.
I just never could. And I haven't. I called Charles Davelin Charles.
All the players call him Chuck, apparently. Yeah. So whenever I'm speaking to him, I call him Charles. But I never have to say his last name when I'm speaking to,
yeah,
him. So I'm not butchering. I tell you, the thing that bothers me is when reporters start calling players by their nickname. There was a linebacker here, Chris Paul, and his nickname was Pooh. Yeah. And it just always, like, it kind of made my skin crawl whenever I'd say, yeah, I hear somebody at the press conference say, hey, Pooh, could you?
Yeah.
I never. Never cared for that.
Yeah. Well, but anyway, back to your play. My favorite thing, and I said it at the end of the inning. I said my favorite play was that. That's a hustle play, mm-hmm. right there, and that says a lot about Davalon as a player. I mean, think about where the game's at right then. It's cold. The inning's already been long. I think we've already scored eight runs or something to that point, seven mm-hmm. or eight.
Seven. That allowed the eighth to score when they overturned it.
So it had been real easy for him. That was a rollover. You know he's not happy with the swing. He ground out to second. Guy bobbled a little bit. And he just hauled down the line. I mean, he just flew down the line. You know, he got down the line in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys wouldn't have done that, you know, and he mm-hmm. beat that out. And I don't know. It just says a lot about him as a player. It says a lot about this team. And even before that, I mean, Souza hit a ball that could have been a double play ball. 4-6-3, beat it out. So I don't know. Plays like that really stand out in my mind. Now, you know, the 12-run inning, that's really cool. 17 batters to the plate. I wrote down everything that happened. We had 5 singles, a double, a triple, mm-hmm. 2 home runs, 2 walks. We reached on 2 errors, 2 fielder's choices, an infield hit, and then I said hustle plays. We had Souza and then Davalon. But the Davalon one really stood out to me, and I think it's just kind of an example of this team, and have him at the top of the order is huge.
It stood out to Dave Van Horn, too, after the game. I asked him about the 12-run inning and how rare those are, and as part of the answer that you're about to hear here, he mentioned the Davalon play.
I feel like, and I just talked to the guys about it out there, that's what I mentioned, that 12 runs in an inning, that's super hard to do. You know, it just – things happen, you're going to make outs, hit balls at people, whatever. I think they just did a good job of not trying to do too much. They took some walks, we had some singles, you know, home run, extra base hits, but they just didn't chase, you know, didn't get themselves out. And, you know, then obviously I mentioned that Davalon really hustled down the line, freezing cold day, game was in hand pretty much at the time, and, you know, here he is, you know, given everything he's got to beat that ball out, and he did. And then, you know, the next hitter hits a triple and drives in 3 more runs, and that got the next hitter up. And what'd he do? He hit a home run, or I don't know. You know, he just kept scoring, and I don't know, just kind of doing what they do and not trying to do too much, pass to the next guy. And, you know, we had a big inning down there at Ole Miss and super big inning today, and you have to work for those now.
Arkansas's got a lot of these big innings this year. I looked it up last night after the game. They've got 11 innings this year where they've scored at least 5 runs. They have had a 7-run inning. They've had an 8-run inning. They've had a 10-run inning. And now this 12-run inning yesterday. I mean, it's like, and I asked Cam Kozel about this last night. It's like, can you feel that this is about to happen? And he just said, hey, hitting's contagious, and you don't want to be the guy that lets the – that lets the team down in that type of rally.
Yeah, I mean, we say it all the time, hitting's contagious. But and one thing Dave always says is how hard it is to string hits together. Now, mm-hmm. it's a little bit harder in an SEC game, obviously, but they did it against Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
It's just having quality at-bats. It's stacking those quality at-bats together. And you play as a team, and you're not, you know, they're unselfish at-bats. Anytime you see an inning like that, there's some unselfish at-bats in the middle of that. I mean, always. And so it's good to see.
And he also says that it takes some help from the other team. I mean, and mm-hmm. you mentioned there's walks, there's errors, there's some things that help you get to that. You're not gonna string together 12 hits in an inning. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
No.
But yeah, they helped him out a little bit there. It was just the 4th time in program history, by the way, Arkansas had scored 12 runs in an inning. Mentioned the St. Louis game in 2010 when they scored 14 in the first. Actually, one of the other 4 happened against ORU in 1993, April 20th, over in Tulsa. Arkansas won that game 16-1. They scored 12 runs in the 6th inning of that game. And then it happened 3 times under Van Horn. Happened in the 7th inning of a 17-2 win over Siena on March 8th, 2008. So 4 times in however many years, I would say 100 plus years of Razorback baseball, but there's like 40 years where stats are missing. And so, you know, so about 65 years of recorded Razorback baseball history.
Well, it's pretty cool to think that, you know, you look at the ball that Kojel hit. I want to say he hit it like, I think it was 90 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. If he hits that 91 miles an hour, it goes out. I mean, I thought it almost carried out anyway. He didn't hit it very well. Mm-hmm. But anytime you hit it that high into the wind, anything can happen. So I think one more mile an hour off the bat, and that's a home run.
So, I mean, it felt like they were playing at Wrigley Field yesterday. Yeah. I mean, it was windy. It was blowing out. It's cold, real cold. Were you surprised that more balls didn't leave the field? Because I thought it might be a day where we saw, you know, 5-plus home runs.
You know, I think it's a testament to this team and the discipline of this team. I saw some pitches inner third where guys brought their hands inside and hit them up the middle. Mm-hmm. That could have been balls they could have tried to jerk out of the yard. So I think it just goes back to the discipline of the team and just trying – I think Dave just said it right there, trying not to – not trying to do too much, you know, and I think that's a kind of testament to the guys.
Because we were talking about the wind on Tuesday before the game, and it was – similar wind gusts, but it was from a different direction. But, you know, you were basically saying whenever you worry about hitters on these windy days because they might be trying to play to that and try to launch one, right?
I'll tell you, as a hitter, Matt, when you step up to the plate and if you feel like me as a left-handed hitter, I step up to the plate. If I feel the wind hitting me right here in the left cheek, I know the wind's blowing out. And it is real hard to stay on a ball because your instincts are like, oh, I got to get the barrel out there. I got to get the barrel out there. And then what do? You roll over. You end up with 3-4 threes and a 3 unassisted, 0-4. But it just makes you do things that it's hard because your natural instinct is to try to play pepper with a scoreboard, and you just got to be disciplined.
I mean, it was one of the windiest games I can ever remember. A couple of stories about yesterday. I was driving here yesterday morning, driving through my neighborhood, and everybody's trash cans had, like, it was trash day in our neighborhood. Everybody's trash can was on the side. And I took my girls up to my wife's mother's house today. They live in kind of this forest. And her stepdad showed me where a tree, like real tall tree, I mean, we're talking, you know, probably 70 feet or higher, had actually snapped in half from the wind yesterday. And I guess it kind of rotted out in the side, and then the wind caused it to completely go over. So it was a legit wind yesterday, unlike we see here very often.
Yeah, and I thought it was typical DVH. They didn't take BP yesterday.
No, really?
Yeah, and on the field. They didn't hit on the field. And, you know, you can look and say, well, why didn't they? And you know, I think you could probably figure out the fact that I'm sure they don't want them up there trying to hit home runs in BP because, like I said, it's natural instincts. The wind's blowing out 35, 40 miles an hour. You want to get one up in the wind. The next thing you know, you're pulling off everything. So I thought it was typical DVH that they didn't hit out in the field. But, yeah.
One more thought on the weather. I walked out of Baum yesterday, and it was snowing.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was snowing. I went to the facility last night, got up to Springdale, and it's snowing and sleeting up there.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Going back to the big innings, what do you think it is about this lineup that's able to put these together so, I guess I should say the word frequently, because it seems like about every other game, you look up and there's what do you consider a crooked inning, 4 runs or more?
Yeah, 4 or 5.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you get to 5, that feels like a good.
Based on competition, so like they had 2 4-run innings against Ole Miss on Sunday, that feels like a crooked inning to me because the type of pitching that you're facing is better than maybe if you scored 4 runs against a Grambling or an ORU.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you get an SEC play, a 4-run inning's a really good inning. But to your question about how are they able to do it? It's a lot of what Dave said right there is just unselfish at bats. You know, guys, they take advantage of other teams' mistakes, but they grind out at bats up and down the lineup. And I don't know if you listened to the SEC guys when we were playing Ole Miss, how complimentary they were of our hitters, fouling off pitches, battling, and they were just like 1 through 9. There's not a guy that just goes up there and mails in at bat. You feel like every guy in the lineup is going to go up there and battle for you.
I'm always fascinated to look back at these big innings and look at how many pitches were thrown. So ORU yesterday to 17 batters threw 71 pitches, Portland, Charlotte, I should say, when Arkansas had the big inning against Charlotte, they threw 66 pitches to 16 batters. But then you look at Ole Miss, I think there were 12 batters in the inning. There were 37 pitches. So, you know, very, very different kind of approach. It's just kind of interesting to see how they're kind of – there are multiple ways to put together these types of innings.
Right. I tell you what, at Ole Miss, we were aggressive early in the count. We got pitches and we drove them, which I really love. Like, I love Davalon's at bat coming up in the last inning, down to our last out. I mean, that's a confident hitter to go up there and get a first-pitch fastball a little bit up and in and hammer that ball to right field to drive it into tying run.
What are you seeing from Davalon right now that's making him so good? Here's his numbers. He went 3-for-4 yesterday. It was his fifth consecutive multi-hit game. He's got multiple hits in 8 of his last 10 games, and during that stretch over his last 10 games, he is 22-for-41. That's a .537 batting average from your leadoff guy.
It's pretty good, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I see. So when he came in, he had that kind of a little bit of hover leg kick. You don't really want to call it a leg kick because it was more he got up, he's got his leg up and he hovered.
Mm-hmm. Looked like a karate move.
Yeah, and his body kind of tilted just a little bit. Quick story, I'll tell you. Very first day in Yankee spring training. First day for hitting talk after I signed with the Yankees. They bring us all together. The hitting coordinator is going to come out, and I'm like, sweet. He's going to talk about hitting. Like, this is the holy grail to hitting. I'm going to learn how to be a hitter now. And very first thing they said, Matt, was they talked about keeping boxes stacked up. He's like, you got 3 boxes. Keep them stacked up. They're talking about your head, your mm-hmm. middle, and your waist. And it's just it's so true about hitters. It's basically being in an athletic position. Every other sport, they talk about being in an athletic position. But when it comes to hitting, no one ever talks about it. When he took the leg kick out or the little hover thing out that he was doing, went to a simple little tap and go, all of a sudden his body's back in line. Hmm. Boxers are stacked up. So now he's able to hit the ball to all fields. He can still handle the ball at the top of the zone. Early on, he was hooking a lot of balls, getting pitches outer part of the plate, I call 6s or 7s, and hooking them to the right side. Now he's hitting those balls to the left field.
When you see a guy going opposite field as much as he is, I mean, does that tell you that he's locked in?
Tells me he's got a plan.
Okay.
You know, it tells me he's got a plan and approach at the plate. Because I see him taking pitches away, hit them to left. I see him taking pitches in, hammering them to right. But then with 2 strikes, you can see him like last night even. He had a pitch inner third, pulled his hands in, just shot it through the hole on the left side. I mean, that's a guy that's just that just knows how to hit.
Mm-hmm. I love, and we've said this before, I love how he and Kozel from the left side, I mean, they abuse the left side of the infield.
Yeah.
I mean, it is opposite field. They'll pull some stuff every now and then, but it is a lot of stuff up the middle and opposite field with those two. And it's really fun, I think, to watch them hit. Because, I mean, going back to what you were saying about having a plan, I mean, you can tell they're not going up there and guessing.
Yeah. I try to always figure out, okay, what's the pitcher going to do right here? What's our hitter going to do? And I try to match the two together, and it's kind of fun. It keeps the game exciting. I mean, I love watching good hitters hit. I love watching good hitters face good pitching. The battle between the two, to me, is just awesome, and I've loved it since I was a little kid, and I still love it.
Another run roll win for Arkansas yesterday. Probably kept some freshmen from getting in. Asked Dave Van Horn afterward, do you want to say who they are? He said no. Don't want to say who they are. So I think that they're still, you know, maybe they don't want to set up an expectation that you're going to see these guys. Because you get to a certain point in the season, if they haven't pitched, it's not worth burning their red shirt to get them in a game. And there aren't just a whole lot of these 5-game weeks left where you might get an opportunity to put them in on a Wednesday developmental day. But I've got some thoughts about who they might have been, but maybe we'll talk about that at another time. I want to talk about game one for this ORU series. Arkansas won 4-1. Really, you go into these press conferences and it's like, okay, kind of what's the lead? Like, what's the first question I need to ask about? And to me, it was Ben Bibee and the 4 scoreless innings that he threw, retired 12 of 13 batters, retired the last 10 that he faced. and he stacked that on top of two really good innings against Ole Miss last week. And all of a sudden, it's like, man, this guy seems like he's found something.
Yeah. Yeah, he really – I think it all starts with he's getting ahead of hitters. I think early in the year, he was getting behind hitters. Now he's throwing strikes, multiple pitches in the zones. You know, he told me, I want to say in the after the game, he said he didn't have his curveball. Didn't really have his curveball going, but he had his slider going. Changeup was good. But what I've noticed is he's throwing his fastball. He can throw it at the bottom of the zone, which is really getting on top, throwing it downhill. And he can throw it at the top of the zone where it's got a little bit of carry on it, top of the zone. But most importantly, he's just getting ahead, working ahead of hitters and just pitching. And that's what it's all about.
When he came in the game against Ole Miss last week, Ole Miss had put the leadoff man on base every inning, and they had scored in every inning. And, I mean, they were cruising. I think it was like 9-2, 9-4, something like that, when he came in. And, you know, that game could have very easily turned into a run rule, Bubba, especially if Bibee pitches like he had pitched at some other points this year where he's walking batters and leaving balls over the middle of the plate, you know, where guys are crushing it. And here's my thought. If Ben Bibee doesn't pitch like he pitches in the Ole Miss game, I don't know that Arkansas wins the series, and here's why. Because of the way that he pitched on Friday, it allowed Arkansas to get close enough that they had – you know where I'm going with this. They had to get their closer warm on Friday, yeah. Connor Spencer. And then when Spencer threw on Sunday, he clearly did not have his best stuff.
Right.
And it's those little things like that that can really add up. Even if it's a loss on that day, I think that his performance that day may have helped lead them to a series win.
Yeah, and I think it's awesome that you pick up on that. A lot of people don't see the little things like that, Matt. But, I mean, little things like that matter. And, I mean, once again, I mean, that's why I love baseball. You can go through and just dissect a game, and it's so awesome every inning just to think about everything that happened. It goes back to – you and I talked about it earlier in the week, the what-if thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a huge what-if right there. Just Ben going out and doing what he did, you know, really affected Sunday, because you're right, he didn't have his good stuff on Sunday.
Dave said, and this was before his start against ORU, it was on the pregame show with Phil, and he said that they thought that the way Ben threw against Ole Miss was maybe the best that they have seen him pitch in his 3 years here. Now, I should have asked after the ORU game, was that the best performance? Was that better than Ole Miss? But you know, what they did say was like it just felt like he picked up where he left off against Ole Miss. How do you think maybe he fits into the weekend pitching plans now if he's pitching like this?
You know, he's probably that middle guy they go to, you know, bring the starter out. If he comes out early, they can go to Ben, eat up a couple innings. He could do about anything for you because, once again, he throws strikes. And they know what they're going to get out of him. And man, and it's not just, you know, you talk about his off-speed stuff, but he hit 96 a couple times. And, I mean, his fastball's coming along. I mean, he's a big body guy. And for a big guy, he has a good changeup. He hides it well. A lot of the bigger guys, when they throw their changeup, they slow down. They show it, and you can see it plain as day. But Ben does a good job of hiding his changeup.
All right, we got a lot more to go here on our podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk about the South Carolina series this weekend. Also, some updates on Gage Wood and Hunter Dietz from yesterday's press conference with Dave Van Horn. But first, word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Arkansas. So we were talking about this in the break a second ago. I wanted to ask you about ORU in that first game. Parker Coyle's cousin, Owen, is a DH at ORU. Owen's from Stillwater. Parker's from the Oklahoma City area in Edmond. And as Owen Coyle is getting ready to go to the plate, he's in the on-deck circle. It's his time to come up. They pull him out and put a pinch hitter in and deny the Coyle family, many of whom are in the ballpark, an opportunity to see these two guys, you know, who grew up with each other and, you know, an opportunity to see them face each other in a Division I game. I just thought that was terrible.
Yeah, but, I mean, I can understand why he did it. But, yeah, for feel-good reasons, it would have been really good. But Phil and I were talking about it leading up to that. We're like, oh, I hope, you know, hope they leave him in the game. And, yeah, it didn't work out. But that would have been cool.
Some things are bigger than baseball.
Yep.
That's what I'll say. So, South Carolina comes in here this weekend. The Gamecocks are 17-5 overall. They're 1-2 in the SEC. They lost their series against Oklahoma last week. It was a 1-1 series going into Sunday, and it went to extra innings. OU won in 10, 6-5 at Founders Park over in Columbia. South Carolina won its midweek game this week over College of Charleston by a score of 4-3. That game was played on Tuesday. And so here come the Gamecocks, third year in a row that Arkansas has seen them. Kind of an interesting deal because, you know, the divisions don't exist anymore. But when divisions did exist, there was never a year where – or there was never a period, you're at least under the latest scheduling agreement, where you would see South Carolina 3 years in a row. Now, when they first came in the SEC, Arkansas and South Carolina played all the time.
Right.
They were like permanent opponents. But anyway, kind of interesting how you're going to see them for the third consecutive year. You've been looking at their stats. What stands out to you?
You know, if you look at them hitting from a hitting aspect, I mean, their team averaged 285. We're at 322. They've hit 21 home runs. We've hit 47. We've scored 206 runs. They've scored 160. I mean, offensively, we're definitely putting up better numbers. Now, pitching wise, they're a little bit ahead of us. We're pretty comparable. The number that stood out for me first of all, we've walked 57 batters. They've walked 93, but we've struck out 219. They've struck out 250. That's a big strikeout number this early in the year. So opponents' batting average, 201 is what opponents are hitting against them, against Razorbacks, 227. So they seem to have some power guys there that are getting it done for them. Looked at their starter stats. Their starter stats are pretty good, you know, across the board. So who we think they may start. So should be interesting.
Well, if you look at what they did last week against OU, they started Brandon Stone on Friday, Jake McCoy on Saturday, and Dylan Eskew on Sunday. We don't know exactly what their pitching plans are for this week. We'll see. Those guys have got, you know, I mean, some McCoy's numbers are a little high, 5.25 ERA, a 1.3 whip. But otherwise, you know, the numbers are pretty good. You just wonder at this point, though, like who have they faced? You know what I mean? I know they played Clemson. Clemson's usually a pretty good team. They lost all three to Clemson. OU's off to a good start. OU kind of, you know, we talk about Alabama and how they're so good early in the year, but how are they actually going to do, you know, once they get to SEC play? OU kind of reminds me of them. You see OU get off to a lot of these hot starts, and then, you know, once they get to conference play, it's not quite as good as it was in the non-conference. And that doesn't mean that just because it's happened in past years that it's going to happen this year. But I am a little skeptical about, you know, the fact that OU is the only conference team they played.
Yeah, and you know, it's so much easier when we get deeper into conference. Mm-hmm. Like, once we get deeper into conference, I throw away the stat sheet, and I just go SEC stats only. Mm-hmm. Because that's what really matters.
Have you done that yet?
Well, I looked at where they were. I haven't done it yet. But against they're ranked 13th in batting average. We're ranked 5th. ERA, we're ranked 8th. They're ranked 7th. But, you know, it's hard to tell after one series and one opponent because we don't know about how good OU is. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I would say that Ole Miss is definitely better than OU.
So Cole Messina's gone from South Carolina.
Finally.
Sure, probably that makes you happy, right?
Oh, my gosh.
He was a Razorback killer.
Yeah, that guy's unbelievable.
Yeah.
We couldn't get him out.
That SEC tournament game he had was phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. So everything he hit.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's great. They do have Ethan Petrie back. I'm trying to find these Petrie stats, but, you know, basically Arkansas has owned this guy, and he's a great hitter. I mean, this is a guy who's probably going to be a first-round draft pick later this year. There was one point in his career where the, you know, Baseball America types were saying that he might be 1-1 in 2025. Now, he's not going to be. You know, he's probably going to be somewhere in the teens, maybe even in the 20s, you know, overall when he gets picked. But, you know, this is a career 341 hitter, and he just has not hit well against Arkansas. Here's the numbers. He is 2-for-28 in his career against Arkansas. 7 games, 17 strikeouts. With 17 strikeouts. Put another way, Bubba, 13% of all of his career strikeouts have come in the 7 games against Arkansas. 13% of all of his strikeouts in 5% of his career games. Arkansas has figured out a way to, you know, like if it, this happens one game or 2 games, it's like, okay, maybe he had a bad day. Right. When it happens in 7 games over the course of 2 years, it tells me that they have figured out a way to pitch him.
It's crazy to think that. I remember when he came in as a freshman, and I mean, I heard a lot about him.
I think he was leading the league in batting average when they came to Fayetteville, and that was the next to last series of the season in 23.
Yeah, and I remember by the end of the series, I mean, he just was done. He was just looked defeated at the plate, and we just carved him up. So kudos to the scouting staff for figuring out a couple of holes in that swing and how to attack it.
He struck out 4 times against Arkansas at the SEC tournament last year. Again, they figured something out with him, and I'll be interested to see if that can continue this weekend. It's different pitchers in a lot of cases than the ones that have faced him in the past.
You know, it's one thing to identify something, because you can look at Razorback hitters, and you know, most guys have a hole in their swing somewhere. You just got to find it, and then once you find it, you've got to be able to attack that spot. And it's easier said than done. You know, even if you know what the weakness is, you've still got to be able to execute that pitch into that location. So, be interesting to see. And then on the flip side, you know, he knows what's getting him out. And, and once again, this goes back to what's awesome about baseball is
game within a game.
Yeah, it's a game within a game, and every pitch, you know, is like it's blackjack. You know, every card changes your odds, and every pitch changes your odds. And so, I mean, that's kind of stealing that from Moneyball, but it's so true. And so it's awesome to see. But you know, at this point, he knows exactly how we're going to attack him. And it'll be interesting to see if he makes an adjustment.
So South Carolina, their new coach is Paul Maneri, who spent 15 seasons at LSU, won a national championship there, had a lot of years where he had national championship caliber teams. Didn't end real well for him at LSU. They kind of went downhill his last 2 or 3 years. But this is a Hall of Fame coach. I asked Dave Van Horn yesterday about what's it going to be like seeing Paul Maneri back in the dugout this weekend.
It'll be different seeing him in a different uni like that. I've known Paul for a long time, coached a lot of games against him. And, it'll be fun to see him over there. You know, when game starts, all about – trying to beat him.
I think there's a lot of mutual respect between Van Horn and Maneri. I certainly know on Maneri's part, every year whenever Arkansas was getting ready to play LSU, you would hear him talk about how much he respected Van Horn and the Razorback program. I was listening last night. He had a coach's show in Columbia, and again, it was talking about Van Horn and how much he respected Arkansas's program. Their series, whenever Maneri was at LSU, was always really competitive. I don't know. I looked up the record. Maneri has a 34-17 record against Van Horn, and I don't think that's reflective of just how competitive the series was. LSU a lot of times would win 2 of 3, and they would pull. They would figure out a way to pull the carpet out from under Arkansas, whether it be remember the Jax Biggers throw to first base with 2 outs in the 9th inning, or the Possum game down at LSU in 2016. It just felt like. I don't even know. I don't feel like 34-17 is really reflective of how good the matchups have been between their teams.
Yeah, I think it's been a lot of fun, and you know, we're talking about last night on the broadcast about how it's just going to seem it's going to seem odd seeing him in a different uniform.
Mm-hmm.
You get so used to it, you know, like Bianco, seeing him in a different – I mean, those guys you just – you know, Sullivan out in Florida, seeing him – those guys, you just get used to seeing them in that uni. And so, mm-hmm. I don't know. But I think it would be a good series. I think South Carolina is going to be well coached. I think he does a good job with the team. It should be a lot of fun.
What do you remember about his LSU teams?
I remember they play hard. I mean, I really do. And, I mean, it's – you know, we talk about certain teams play hard and then some kind of dog it. And, mm-hmm. and his teams always play hard. That's the thing I like about them. They seem scrappy. They don't quit. You know, they'll battle you till the end. If you make a mistake, they take advantage of it. A lot of similarities in the way Arkansas attacks teams.
They don't show you up either.
Mm-mm, they don't. None of that.
That was the one thing I always respected about LSU is that they were really good, mm-hmm. and they knew they were good with players yeah. like, you know, Aaron Nola or Alex Bregman or whoever. But they just – it was a very – almost like professional type way that they went about how they were doing things.
Yeah, and that's something to definitely respect these days because there's a lot of clowns out there that don't play the game that way. And I think that I don't know. It just says a lot about him and you know just understanding the right way to go about playing a game of baseball.
So Arkansas, we don't know what their starting rotation is going to be yet for this weekend. Last week they went Zach Root and then Gabe Gackle and then Landon Vinalsee at Ole Miss, and it didn't go well. I mean, just 9 1/3 innings that the Razorbacks got from those three starters. How do you think they're going to do this weekend? My gut feeling, and we'll know probably about 2 o'clock this afternoon, my gut feeling says they'll keep the same three again this week and see if it works, and then if it doesn't, maybe – adapt it before they go to Vanderbilt next week.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to change it. Now, I haven't seen the splits. I haven't seen how South Carolina does against righties versus lefties. Haven't gotten into that yet. I think they'll leave it the same. You know, I really think Zach Root pitched, and I get it. Both guys got to go out there and pitch. I think the day that he pitched was a really tough day to pitch.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing at Ole Miss. The wind's howling out, and as a pitcher, I think he was trying to make that perfect pitch, so he fell behind hitters and then had to throw it over the plate and got hit. I mean, a couple of those were wind-blown home runs, but, you know, once again, both guys got a pitch in that. But I think that really affected Zach Root. I look at it and say, you know, kind of like Zach said about Zackle. Gackle.
Zackle.
Zackle. I kind of morphed them together.
You did.
But when you have a bad start, you know, you feel sorry for that next team he's going to face. And I expect him to come out Friday and have a really good start if he's the Friday night guy.
Just tell Gabe that whenever he has a son, name him Zach and call him Zackle.
Zackle. It was a long night last night.
So Dave Van Horn, again, he didn't mention who he's going to start, but he was asked about the starting rotation and his thoughts on what he saw last week against Ole Miss and maybe how that affects going into this weekend.
Well, if you look back at our starters last week, you know, all three of them will probably tell you they didn't have a good start. And we didn't have good starts. The bullpen did a great job and we swung the bats. We need the starters, you know, to get off to a better start, so to speak. You know, Gackle did well after he got through the first inning. He threw great. His stuff was really good. The other two guys weren't as sharp as they had been in the past, locating. Their stuff was pretty good. Location wasn't what it needs to be in our league. So hopefully they'll get that going. But, I mean, to answer your question, to me it doesn't matter when they pitch. Just when they pitch, they need to pitch well. To me, I say this to the guys all the time, the games all count the same. Whether you win on Friday or Sunday, the goal is to, at a minimum, to win 2 out of 3 and hopefully win them all. So just when they get the ball this weekend, go give us, you know, a good start, give us a chance to get off to a good start so we can get into the game a little bit.
So I've got your answer here. South Carolina against left-handed pitchers, 263. Against right-handed pitchers, 291. But then you look at on base, 263 against left-handers, 409 against right-handers. So maybe they're drawing more walks, getting hit by right-handed pitchers more than they are lefties.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Nothing else to take out of that?
Well, I mean, it's early, so, you know, I think you throw your lefties at them.
How sleepy are you right now?
I'm not. I'm coming around.
I'm a little sleepy. Bit.
Are you?
Yeah. Two late nights of baseball. And the deal is, like, you think, well, yesterday's game was at 3. It was a 7-inning run. It was still a late night of baseball. There was a lot. I went back and looked up a bunch of stuff last night and kind of spent an hour and a half or so going through the media guide looking up some stuff. So,
well, you know, last night after the game, I had a kid from Arkansas Tech, and he's been scuffling just a little bit, so he wanted to come down and hit, so he drove down. So I went up and hit with him last night. Hmm. And his kid had played for me, so his family was there. So we were up there late last night talking. So, but that's fun. That's the fun part of it.
How do you feel now that the TrackMan strike zone has gone away?
Well, I think it sucks. I'd have to mute the mic to say what I really want to say. But I think it's another one of those stupid things. And I want to say we're the only conference doing it. I don't think anyone else is doing it. I think SEC's the only one.
And you're talking about having the tablets in the bullpen or in the dugout.
Yeah, and having the strike zone there and all that. I just think it's – I mean, let's just play baseball. Quit worrying about all that crap and just let's just get the game right.
I think what they don't want to happen is – there be a situation where an umpire misses a critical, you know, 3-2 count, and a head coach runs out with his tablet and says, "Look here, what you just did." I think that's what they're trying to avoid. And so, for people who don't know, tablets are in the dugouts this year, and on TrackMan, which has got pretty much anything that you want. Bubba says that if he had it at home, he'd never sleep. They've taken the strike zone off of TrackMan, so because the tablets are in the dugout, and so now we're not able to see where the pitch location was based on the TrackMan strike zone.
Have you seen a coach come out there with a TrackMan?
I have seen, not in baseball, and I can't remember what team this was. It was kind of like a mid-major football team that had maybe just come up to Division I. Within the last 2 or 3 years, where he had a staffer show him a replay on his cell phone on the sideline, and the head coach took the cell phone out and showed the referee what they had just what they had just done or missed, or I can't remember exactly how it went.
Well, I've pulled my phone out before and showed an ump the official rule. And they don't like that either. But I've never seen a coach run out with their tablet and say, if there was an SEC coach.
I was about to ask you this.
I know who I'm going to say automatically.
Who would you say?
I'd say Vitella would run out there with his tablet and say, look, that's a ball or that's a strike. You know what I mean? Who do you say?
I wouldn't say it was one of the older coaches. So you can, I think Van Horn, Corbin, Bianco, Schlossnagel, you can. O'Sullivan gets a little crazy.
Yeah.
And depending on how many push-ups he's done that morning, maybe he does. I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, Tony's he's had some antics.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a great question. Maybe the young guy at A&M, we can throw him under the bus because he may not be there very long.
He needs to do something different.
Boy, they're off to a rough start. Yeah.
Okay, how do you go from number one preseason to out of the polls this quick? I mean, we haven't played that many games.
For one, I think that – I mean, the injuries, I think, play a factor. But I think it goes back to Schlossnagel is a really good coach. Look at what he's done with Texas in 1 year.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's not even their full year yet. I think that people probably – and I'd put myself in this situation because – or in this conversation, because I thought if you just look at roster, I thought A&M looked like the number one team in the preseason because of everybody that they had back. But you kind of – sometimes it's easy to look at the roster and not think about how the coaching got the roster into that place in the past.
Yeah, but when it comes to Schlossnagel, did you not lose a little respect for him the way that whole thing went down?
Oh, I didn't say that.
I mean, I can't –
yeah, no, I mean, that was certainly very...
How can you look at the camera and say what he said knowing that he's already gone?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the contract's been signed.
You don't hire coaches based on ethics, so you're based on whether or not they can win and they lose, and that guy wins.
Yeah, I don't care. It just that rubs me the wrong way. And I DVH wouldn't do that. DVH wouldn't look at the camera and say, I'm here at University. I'm not leaving. Mm-hmm. Knowing he'd already signed a contract somewhere else. I mean, I don't know. There's a character issue there with me. And if I'm going to send my kid to your school, I have to know that I can trust that head coach. And I don't know that I can trust him.
Some people might say that his character matches his new employer.
There you go.
So Dave Van Horn was asked yesterday about Gage Wood. I asked the question about whether or not we might see him this weekend. You know, what we heard when Gage got hurt was that it was going to be a 3 to 6 week recovery. And we've heard a couple of times since then that the recovery probably might be on the quicker end of that time frame. So I asked Van Horn last night, is there a chance we might see him against South Carolina? And here's what he said.
Oh, no. Not going to see him this weekend. Yeah, he had some soreness in there. And then also, you know, then we're just making sure we're just taking our time with it. Let's leave it at that.
I don't want to read too much into this, but that does not sound as encouraging as some of the previous updates on Gage.
Yeah, I think so. And I asked in the dugout yesterday, one of the coaches, something about it, and you know when to pursue something and when not to. And, you know, I got a similar answer to that, and I just left it at that. And, you know, but Gage is a guy that, I mean, you know he's pushing himself extra hard to get back in there, and, you know, maybe pushed a little too hard. I don't know, but I think he'll get it worked out. There's no need to rush him right now.
They're okay without him.
Yeah.
They have been okay without him, and the most important thing is to have him available at the end of the year.
Yeah. I mean, I look at him, I look at Dietz and all those guys. I mean, those two guys. And you just say, well, as long as we're – it's a long season. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Let's let them get healthy and go. And I wouldn't be concerned about Gage. I think Gage is going to be fine. There's so much, you know, and you look at how muscly he is. Now, Charlotte, there's a lot of stuff going on in there, and so you got to get all that right before you rush him out there.
Hunter Dietz, Bubba mentioned him. He was also asked about last night in the Dave Van Horn press conference. Of course, Dietz hasn't pitched this year, only pitched a couple of times last year. Super high upside for Hunter Dietz once they finally get him to 100% of what he was before that injury. This is what Dave Van Horn had to say about his timeline.
Deacon, where's he at?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that, he's throwing the ball 91, 92, 93 now. It's just a matter of, him being able to get our hitters out. And I would say he's probably at least a couple weeks away, but we're still working to get him back. We need another guy. We need a left-hander.
91 to 93. Where was he before the injury? Do you remember?
Yeah, he was a little bit faster.
Yeah,
like, I want to say
like maybe 94, 95 in that range, 96.
Yeah, and he's a guy that's going to throw harder than that. I mean, I do know when you look at it like from a scouting position, you look at him and he's as high end a guy as we have on that whole staff, and there's a ton of really good guys on that staff. But you look at him and you're like, man, his upside is unbelievable once he's healthy. But it's March 20th. Wait, what is it?
March 20th.
It's March 20th.
Allegedly, so. The first day of spring. Christina and I had a conversation about this yesterday.
Says who?
What do you, when do you consider the first day of a new season?
You know, I like it. Like, you know, April 1st, start to feel like, okay.
So you just make up stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
I was always taught it was the 21st of every third month. So like March 21st, June 21st. September 21st, December 21st, and then then you have the scientific. No, it's the equinox, it's the solstice. It's I just like the round number that it's the 21st, not that it's at 2 a.m. on the 20th or 7 p.m. on the whatever.
Is the 21st a round number?
It is to me. It's an easy number to remember.
You're a numbers guy, though. Numbers make sense to you. You're kind of like Rain Man over there.
You are not the first to call me that, by the way.
I mean, some of the stuff that I read, all your numbers, and I'll have to wait, okay, stop, and I'll have to turn everything off so I can focus. Like a lot of times when I'm reading, I've got the TV on, or, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on, and so I'll have to like, okay, wait, I got to focus right here.
It's like Matt's confusing, man. This is Matt Hobbs. I asked him about Dietz last week. He said, quote, it's going to be a matter of he's healthy now, Now he's got to go be better than the guys who are throwing. That, I mean, and that's – there are a lot of pitchers to beat out to get innings right now.
You know, don't you love Matt Hobbs? He keeps it simple, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, a lot of guys, you ask that question.
You talk about processing information. Holy cow, that guy, number one, the way he articulates himself as well as anybody I've ever met.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he gives you a ton of information every question you ask.
Yeah, and it's
And you go back and you – I didn't mean to interrupt, but you go back and you listen to it, and it's like, wow, I missed that whenever he was saying that in real time.
Yeah.
You almost have to listen to it two or three times to really fully absorb everything that he's told you.
But he makes it simple, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just like that statement right there, super simple. Like a lot of pitching guys, they want to throw these giant words at you and these giant word salads and all these fancy terms and all that. And they try to wow you with their vocabulary instead of just saying, hey, you know, when he's better than the guys that we have. And the guys that we have right now are pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm. So Arkansas, Kansas tonight. I told you I was going to ask you for a key to the game. You got one?
Oh, man. No. Arkansas win. How about that?
How do they win?
They can't – you know what? They're too up and down. Like, they go on a run, and then they just fall off.
Too many, like, long droughts without scoring.
Yeah, out. I think to be consistent, you know, I think it's important. It's not have that big. It's kind of like my golf game, having that one bad hole that just runs the rest of it. And it's kind of like Razorback basketball sometimes.
Did you hear me ask Ben Bybee about the, like, kind of the conflict within his family? You know, his parents are KU grads, and he grew up going to KU basketball games because they were – season ticket holders at Fog Allen.
No, because I couldn't hear it. I tried to listen to it. I couldn't hear it. I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but I didn't have a lot of volume.
Was it my fault? I'm not sitting back there at the back of the room running the controls.
I tried to read lips, but I had no idea what was going on.
That's why you need to read the stories. It's right there for you. All right, yeah, Ben Bybee, he said, by the way, that his family, they're all going to be Razorback during this game, but I have a feeling if KU wins tonight, they'll be for KU moving forward the rest of the tournament. Bubba, appreciate you being here.
Yep.
When we come back, Anthony Christensen is going to join us from Providence to talk about tonight's game. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you that Scott Tabor is coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. That's going to be on Wednesday, March 26th at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com. OzarksTix.com for Scott Tabor, the Razorback baseball great. You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com, most in-depth source for all Razorback sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. You can subscribe to our podcast by searching Whole Hog Sports on Apple, or you can find a video version on YouTube by searching Whole Hog Sports on YouTube. We also post the video each weekday to our social media page. Anthony Christensen is in Providence, where the Razorbacks play Kansas tonight in the NCAA tournament first round. Estimated tip-off time is 6:10 p.m., but you know how this goes. A lot of times that can get pushed backward, especially if you have a long game beforehand, and there's two games before Arkansas-Kansas at that site today in Providence, beginning with Purdue and High Point this morning. Clemson and McNeese are going to play a little bit later. 6:10 Central is the announced tip-off time for Arkansas-Kansas. The game is going to be televised on CBS. Anthony was there yesterday when the teams had their media day press conferences with each of the eight coaches who are at that site, plus the teams who are there also had shoot-arounds, kind of, you know, modified practices on the floor at the Amica Mutual Pavilion. Did I say that right, Anthony? Amica?
Amica Mutual Pavilion, yes. Okay. That's where we're at.
Okay, I could see where you could say it Amica, but Amica. I just
I think it's Amica. Maybe it is Amica. I've always I've been saying Amica the whole time, but you know, that just sounds more natural, I guess. I don't know.
Let's amicably agree on Amica. How about that?
Hey.
So I mean, what did you learn anything yesterday at all from listening to Calipari and Bill Self?
I learned John Calipari doesn't like my haircut. But other than that, nothing too extreme. You know, he did say Boogie Flan's hand bothered him a little bit, in one of his recent practices, but he's still full go. He's ready to play, but nothing too, newsworthy from those games. I know Zvonimir Visic is good to go. Obviously his hand wrist was bothering him in the SEC tournament, but he's good to go, but nothing too newsy. But yeah, I think, you know, at this point of the season, you are what you are, so there's not going to be a lot of new twists and turns that you're going to get from any of that stuff. So there is that. But no, it's exciting. I'm standing here in the stairwell just with High Point and Purdue just about getting ready to get started. I said yesterday, I couldn't stop smiling. The grin's only gotten wider. So yeah, we're ready to go. I'm excited.
Did you talk to Boogie at all yesterday? Because this would have been the first time, I think, that you would have had a chance to speak to him since the injury happened.
I did not, but Ethan Westerman did. So we split up. I did the press conference, and he went into the locker room, and he got to talk to Boogie a little bit. And he said, you know, his wrist is fine. He just doesn't want to upset any of the chemistry or anything like that. So there is that, but yeah, Ethan got to talk to him. I did not talk to him, but yeah, that's kind of that. He seems ready to go. I watched him in practice a little bit. It looks like it's not bothering him. He's not wearing a brace or anything. So there is that, but yeah, no, I think he's ready to go. I'm sure he's excited to get back on the floor after such a long time away. So yeah, that's kind of where that is.
Okay, so Anthony teased this a second ago. This is what John Calipari had to say yesterday about Boogie Fland, his injury, and just kind of how he fits into the rotation in this game tonight against Kansas.
You know, I'm trying to think of the rotation. Like, how am I going to do this? It was a great story when he came and said, look, I'm going to be able to go, but I don't want to hurt the team. They're doing some good stuff. And I said, but then he said, but if I can help this, I said, yeah, you can help us. We only have 7 guys. And so now it's, I'm not, you know, how we rotate this and how we slide him in is going to be really important. And I'm just telling him, just go be you. Don't worry about making shots, shoot balls. If they go, they go. If they don't, they don't. Do some of the stuff you did before you went down.
Did it seem like his shooting form was okay?
Yeah, for sure. He's looking like Boogie Fland. I mean, obviously they weren't going full go in that practice, so it's, I guess, a little tough to say 1,000% sure that he's looking like he's back to his best. But yeah, his shooting form looked like it did. It looked like Boogie Fland's shooting form, and it looked like he's feeling good. He's ready to go. Didn't look like his thumb or his hand were bothering him really at all, which obviously is going to be good. It'll be interesting to see just how smoothly he integrates back into that starting five, if he was to start, of course, or in the rotation in general. But yeah, no, it didn't look like it was bothering him at all. It looked like his shooting form was what it was. Yeah.
Bill Self also spoke yesterday during this. Obviously, he had his own news conference there in Providence, and he was asked about the October 25th exhibition game at Bud Walton Arena. Arkansas won it 85-69, as most of you well know. And he was asked, you know, what he remembers about that game and how Boogie Fland in particular affected Arkansas that night. And this is what Bill Self, the Kansas coach, had to say.
Well, they dominated us in the exhibition. You know, Hunter didn't play, Ryland didn't play, Shaq didn't play, if I'm not mistaken, Adu didn't play for them, and Nelly was not quite healthy yet, even though he played. athletically, they were much more physical and faster, especially at the guard spots. I think the thing about it is, and granted, I've watched them quite a bit through the year and watched a lot here of late, but it seems like to me the emergence of Brazil and Richmond, to me, as much as anything, has keyed everything. DJ's playing at a high level. The other guys are playing at the level they were expected to play to, in my opinion. But those two have just taken off since we played the exhibition. And then, you know, Boogie was probably the best player in that exhibition game. So getting him back, I'm sure, will be a bonus for them. They present a lot of challenges because they're athletic and they're shooting the ball more consistently now. And they've shown that when they're good, they're as good as anybody.
Bill Self on the Razorbacks. Another soundbite from Self that we'll play here, and this one kind of stood out to me, and it speaks to the quality, I think, of the teams and the coaching here in this pod in Providence. Basically talking about the potential of an Arkansas-St. John's rematch, which, of course, a lot of national people have spoken about this week, and how that would pit Calipari and Pitino on opposing sidelines. Obviously, their rivalry when Cal was at Kentucky and Pitino was at Louisville was legendary. And this is what Bill Self had to say about Kansas maybe flying under the radar a little bit this week.
I would think, and I don't know positively, you know, there'll be a little storyline with Kansas and Arkansas, but the potential of a Calipari-Pitino second round game may put Kansas in a favorable light, to be honest with you, because we've been talked about enough over the years and over time. I'm kind of looking forward to having people talk about the others, and maybe we can kind of sneak up on somebody.
Bill Self on Kansas maybe being an underdog, so to speak, in Providence this week. That's hard to really even fathom when you think about the fact that KU won a national championship just 3 years ago, and we talked with Greg Gurley about this. If you haven't listened to our podcast from yesterday, I would encourage you to go back and listen to it. We had Greg Gurley, the KU color analyst, on our show to talk about Kansas' season, but also what's happened to them the last couple of years in the NCAA tournament, where Bill Self couldn't coach 2 years ago and Arkansas beat him in Des Moines, and then last year they had a ton of injuries, including to Kevin McKellar, and they weren't quite the same KU team when they got eliminated by Gonzaga. Anthony, it feels a little weird listening to Bill Self talk about KU flying under the radar and maybe being like an underdog-type team in this this weekend pod.
Yeah, it does. just because, I mean, it's Kansas, right? I mean, you're consistently going to be, you know, competing for national titles and, you know, the Big 12 titles. And, you know, the last couple of years, I mean, Houston has really gone into that league and really made it its own. It feels kind of odd to say just because of how much Kansas has dominated over the years. But Houston has really, really come in and made the Big 12 its league. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, a team like Kansas can respond to that, you know, next season or even in this tournament. But it is weird. Obviously, this is the first time Kansas has been lower than a 4 seed since, I think it was, what, 2000, 2004, somewhere in that range?
2000.
And, yeah, so it is interesting. And, I mean, I'm sure Bill Self is maybe happy to, yeah, not be the sole focus of the conversation. Maybe it's taking some pressure off of his guys and stuff like that. But yeah, who's to say? But it is very odd to hear, you know, people not talking about Kansas when Kansas is what Kansas is, mm-hmm. And has been for, I mean, my entire lifetime and well beyond. So it is interesting, maybe a little funny. I mean, he was laughing about it too, so I feel good about saying that. But yeah, no, certainly interesting.
Kansas is a team that it feels like if they get past Arkansas tonight, they could go on a little bit of a run and maybe challenge to get to that third weekend.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's a very interesting little pod here. Cause I mean, you've got, I mean, St. John's, Arkansas, Kansas, I mean, 3 Hall of Fame coaches right there. And then Omaha's got Chris Crutchfield, who is kind of viewed as a really good up-and-comer in the industry. So it's a fun little pod, fun little quartet of teams. But that you know, frankly, any of them could go on a run. Obviously, Omaha probably is not favored to do so, just because obviously they're the 15 seed and, you know, they're playing against one of the best teams in the country tonight. But yeah, I mean, any of these teams really, you could see making a run to Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four, because they all have the talent. All the three, I guess, favorites, if you will, in this pod have the talent to do that. But you know, obviously Kansas is down from what it typically is. Arkansas was not as good as people maybe thought they would be going into the season. So do they put it all together at the right time and make that run right here? I mean, that's what you dream of in March. So it'll be fun to see. But I mean, this pod is loaded with talent, loaded with Hall of Fame coaches, loaded with great players, and it should be a lot of fun to watch.
I'll give you my key to the game, Anthony, then I want to get yours. It feels to me like the key is how well Arkansas can contain Hunter Dickinson in the low post. If I'm Kansas, if I'm Bill Self, I'm telling my guards, I'm going to pull you out if you don't go into Dickinson 75% to 80% of the possessions, at least right away, and see how Jonas Adu and Zvonimir Ivicic and Trevin Brazil can handle him down the low block. Because, quite frankly, there have been a lot of games where they haven't been able to handle the opposing big man, and they may have not seen a big man as good as Dickinson this year. I don't think that that's a stretch. I mean, this is a guy who's going to be an NBA draft pick. He's a guy that is an All-America type player. His credentials speak for himself. If I'm Kansas, I go straight at Arkansas's big men, and I see if they can defend Dickinson without fouling him. What have you got?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then I would also, and it just maybe feels like a cop-out answer, but whoever hits their shots, right? I mean, these are two very good defensive teams. I think Kansas is rated 11th in defensive efficiency on KenPom, and I think Arkansas is hovering around the 20-ish range. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, but these are two very good defensive teams. So it's going to take somebody finding a way to break down those defenses and you know, get to the basket. You know, if that's Kansas, is it going through Hunter Dickinson? Probably. If that's Arkansas, is it finding, you know, Zvonimir Ivicic or Jonnell Davis hitting those threes on the outside, or is it driving to the basket with DJ Wagner? You know, I think that's another key. I think you're right there on the money with how Arkansas is going to defend Dickinson as kind of the biggest key, but I'm also kind of curious to see which team kind of takes advantage of its open looks that it's going to get. You know, is Zeke Mayo going to hit the threes for Kansas? Is DJ Wagner going to hit, you know, get going, drive into the basket for Arkansas? So I think those are the big keys for sure.
Anthony, appreciate you being with us.
Absolutely. I'm about to go out and indulge in basketball for the entire day. I am fully ready. Thank you for having me.
Sounds good. Anthony Christensen, you can read what he and Ethan Westerman have to write tonight from Providence on our website at wholehogsports.com. We're going to have plenty of Razorback baseball coverage today on our website, too. Looking ahead to that Arkansas-South Carolina SEC home opener this weekend at Baum Walker Stadium. We appreciate you being here. Hope we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. And we're sure we'll have plenty to talk about tomorrow on our podcast. Hope to see you then.